All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 585, I think. Check that. Oh, that is very broken. The website. No, it's 584. My bad, 584. For Thursday, October 31st, 1938. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and happy Halloween. And tonight, we have an Are You? What is up, Are You?
Hello. Oh, mind you, I was actually, I was going to crack a beer. It was just, might as well have a drink on the last episode of the show, because I've never drank on the show before.
Next week's the last.
Is it next week?
It's next week is the last one. This.
Okay.
Yeah, stopping on Halloween would have been good. Not that I
think. Yeah, that's what I thought we were doing that as a thing. But it's next week, so yeah. I'm a week ahead of myself.
Yeah, yeah. What's amusing are you is you're drinking a beer, and I'm not.
Well, I'm not actually drinking a beer because I thought, you fucking maniac, you start drinking midday at fucking on a Friday afternoon? Dude, I'll be fucked by the time my wife gets home and she'd murder me then.
But,
day drinking at my age is not a good thing anymore.
No. No.
Do it while you can, youngins.
That's why. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm not drinking right now, too. I mean, well, you know why I'm trying to moderate, yeah. But it's, yep. I've cut it back to weekends only, which unfortunately includes the show night, and that makes the show
power
harder.
To you, dude. I wish I could do that.
I've been doing it for a month. So
yeah, well, I said more power to you, man.
You know, no, I'm having three or four drinks on the weekend, but I mean, it's not, you know. But also, too, it's just kind of reminding myself, no, I don't have to. And I'm actually noticing the desire for alcohol going down even on the weekends.
How do you sleep, though? Because I can't sleep for shit.
When I figure it out, I'll let you know.
Okay. Yeah. Hence why I haven't quit. I just don't sleep, man.
I do, but not enough.
Well, see, my insomnia started when I was 13. I haven't been able to sleep at night.
Yeah.
True.
Well, because so what'll happen to me, I'll, get tired, I'll go to bed and I'll fall asleep, and then I'll wake up midnight. So I've only been in bed for an hour, and I'll wake up. And sometimes I'll grab the iPad or whatever and just read a little online or, watch something or whatever. And then usually I can get back to sleep maybe 1 or 2 o'clock, but then I'll wake up again a few hours later. And it's just up and down all night long. And yeah. I thought the alcohol was helping with that. Now I don't think it is, but it's happening without the alcohol too. So I don't fucking know. Usually wake up really fucking early. And again, I don't want to get out of bed. So I just, sometimes I can get back to sleep. Sometimes I can't. Sometimes you read something or you're listen to something for a little bit and then you go back to bed. But I just fuck. So like I said, when I figure it out, I'll let you know. Pills, probably.
Yeah, and I'll stick with the booze before pills.
Yeah, I don't particularly want to do that either. So
sleep disorders are fucked up, man.
I think the world's just fucked up anymore.
Well, the last time I think I quit the booze, the auditory hallucination started on day 6 of no sleep. That was getting scary then. I was literally losing my mind without sleep.
Yeah, I mean, that happens if you're not sleeping, but...
Yeah. Anyway.
Have you considered another downer?
Heroin!
Oh, yeah, that's how that works.
Yeah, that gave me the nods real quick. The only problem with heroin is it's so good.
So what you're going to want to do is about an hour before you go to, a couple hours before you go to bed, just eat a shit ton of sugar, right? You have the sugar high and then the crash. See if that does anything for
you. I'll just do a Carrie Fisher. Start speedballing heroin and coke.
Uh, Well, that's
one I don't know many weight. People that don't have a sleep disorder at this point.
That's it's one way to lose weight, I guess. I mean, it's, fuck. But yeah, next week will be the last show for definitely for the year. Probably ever. The website needs some real work. I'm going to spin the stream down because I don't think anybody listens to it anymore anyways. But
no, I'm not even on it anymore. I've moved. Just because we stopped putting new stuff on there.
And I just haven't had time, man.
Oh, really? The dude that did the music hasn't been around for years.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not up on the music. He was. He did a great job to kick it off.
Well, he did it for a while, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was really good because he was a prop of fellow kids. He's still young enough to understand what it was.
Well, it had a nice theme to everything, but it wasn't... It was more than just Patient Zero's stuff, too, which was nice, because I think that was when we started. We just had his stuff, and we started adding more and more. But
more and more.
Yeah. But no, I need to gut the website. I've got an idea for what I want to do with it, but the way I want to do it won't work the way it's hosted right now, so I've got to redo all of that. And I don't know. I've got some stuff to figure out, but I've got so much to, fuck. And
I've got some ideas.
I'm not giving decking the attention it needs to do it properly. And it's getting to the point where okay. Honestly, this evening I was downstairs waiting for trick-or-treaters. Had the laptop out because I had a bunch of work I had to catch up on. So I'm sitting there reviewing resumes at 7 o'clock at night on the work laptop and going, oh fuck, tonight's decking. And when I realized it's oh fuck, not all right, that's not a good sign. So rather than turning it into work or just an empty obligation and dragging it on and making it worse, shitty, I'd rather spin it down while it's still half decent. Or I'm hoping it's half decent. Fuck, I don't know. But anyways.
No one knows what happens in the future, man.
Yeah, hell, we might get itchy and bring it back next year. Especially after the damned election's done. Maybe tech news will pick up again and be something worth talking about. That's the other problem, though, is the whole market has changed. It used to be we were able to talk about basically stories predicting the cyberpunk future. Well, it's here. It's not as nuts as the books and the movies because, you know, it's not everything.
Not as neon. Cool as we thought it
would
nothing,
be. You know, nobody's walking around in the cool looking leather with the sunglasses. No, everybody's just suburbia.
But it is as corporate and fucking lockdown as hell.
Yeah.
It is no fun.
I mean, the stories I have for tonight are all, it's not.
The problem is when you get three or four major players like Google, Amazon, Twitter, and fucking YouTube, there's no room for anything else.
It's not that the show isn't fun anymore, because of course I have a great time hanging out with you guys shooting the shit, because that's basically what we do. What we're covering hasn't been fun for a long time. And I don't know how to change that. Because...
Well, I think the internet needs to change again.
That'd be nice.
Wait, where? What is it? This is 2.0?
Or...
We need a new Wild West frontier, dude.
Yeah.
And I think we were about to see that with AI.
Oh, I don't.
And did you see the Zelda AI trailer?
No, I should probably see that. But...
That is... absolutely amazing considering it's made with AI, and there's quite a few of those trailers floating around now that are all AI, and it looks so much better than anything they pumped out in 15 years out of Hollywood.
So I think the problem we're going to have with AI is not the occasional masterpiece that somebody's able to create with it, because there will be that. I think it's going to be the 489 metric tons of shit that's generated with AI by bots and content farms that's just shoveled everywhere down every thing. And that's what I'm afraid most of it's going to be, is you're going to have, you know, the cream of the crop, which will be absolutely amazing and awesome and validating the technology, and then everything else, which is just going to be god awful.
Well, that's Hollywood, man. You just described the movie industry. There's a chunk of gold every now and then, and the rest is just gravel.
Yeah.
It's painted different colors, but that's about it. And I think another big one for the next couple of years is boomers not understanding what deepfake photos are.
Well, that's already going to be a problem. I mean, they're already...
Well, I'm already seeing it where you're trying to convince them that this isn't fucking real. And that, yes, that one where Joe Biden's trying to eat a baby is real.
Okay. Well, and that's the thing, because it was about a month ago when I was doing decking stories. All of my usual sources, every other fucking post of, no, the picture of Donald Trump saving the dog from the water is not real. It's like, it's not real. It looks like a cartoon. What the fuck?
Because they can't tell the difference, man.
So, yeah.
You got to understand, this is a generation of people raised on TV and told to believe and understand everything in the newspaper is true. And that Dan Rather on the TV was never lied to you.
Yeah, because, you know.
Your government has your best interests at hand because they are here for you as the representative of your people.
Well, I am happy to report that my local government this evening tried to cancel Halloween because of the rain. And several, at least 100 small children told the government to get fucked and still went out trick-or-treating. At least the ones that showed up at my front door, because it was at least 100 kids.
Good for them.
So, and again, I'm a little concerned about the 10-year-old dressed up as Harley Quinn from the movie, not from the cartoon. It's like, wait a minute. That's not... okay. It's like, let's, that's a little weird.
At least it's an upper middle class area that you're in.
Yeah.
A little safer than...
Oh, yeah, no, this neighborhood...
I'm not going to say words.
This neighborhood's fine. This neighborhood's safe. No, they could. Hell, there were lots of kids that were easily under 10 out trick or treating by themselves. This area is fine. And actually, I am fairly certain that if somebody did hurt one of the kids out there, there'd be several people around here who are homeowners out there with guns to solve the problem.
Yeah,
myself included, probably. But anyways, if we do bring decking back, I'm going to want to retool it, because the current format of just going, that story looks good, that one doesn't, it's got a theme to it. It's not, I got to figure out something different. It's not working for me anymore. It's not the show's fine, or you're doing the show is fun.
Dude, the well is run dry.
Yeah, it has. And
wait for the monsoonal season for it to be any decent, and unless there's a massive upheaval with global banking or software outages due to bad code, there's going to be nothing to really talk about, because we've hit that plateau with the internet 2.0 where the corporate boots come down so hard on anybody being an ass clown on the internet that they've essentially sucked all the goddamn life and fun out of it. There's a handful of podcasts I listen to now that they're on the naughty list and have to move constantly because you have deplatform here, deplatform there, but they just keep going, and I think they're great, and I'm going to keep supporting them.
Well, and that's the thing, right? It's like, you have to basically go dig in the underground shit if you want to do this, and the honest truth is, I haven't had time to do it. I haven't had time to sit there to dig through dark nets and message boards to find the shit that's worth talking about, so instead I end up just doing articles, and I'm looking at the list I have tonight, this shit's depressing. Well, except for the Steam one's kind of cool, but other than that,
Working full-time as well doesn't help, plus you got other fucking hobbies.
Too many hobbies. Oh, I wrecked the fuck out of my 3D printer the other night.
What'd you do?
I let it run while I went to the gym and the part detached from the bed. And I came back to a big ball of plastic around the hot end of that printer. It's one of my bamboo machines too. So I was pretty upset about that.
That's like locking your dog in the house with a Roomba.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to happen.
Yeah. I
lucked out. Won't happen every time, but it's going to fucking happen eventually.
I lucked out. It was just the print head that was fucked. I was able to, I had a spare part, so I was able to get it up and going again in about an hour, but it was just, whoo boy. So, all right, let's talk about just how absurd things are getting. U.S. Copyright Office grants DMCA exemption for ice cream machines. This is from Extreme Tech. So first and foremost, ice cream machines had DMCA protection. The fuck?
Yeah, I know.
The Digital Millennium Copyright Act has been a thorn in the side of DIY enthusiasts, security advocates, and content creators for decades, but the draconian law does have some useful provisions. For example, its rulemaking section, which empowers the Librarian of Congress to grant exemptions to DMCA. Public Knowledge and iFixit have struck a blow for ice cream lovers this time around. Soft serve machines, like the ones that constantly break down at McDonald's, are now exempt from the DMCA. This is literally because the McDonald's ice cream machines are always broken because they signed a shitty contract for their machines a couple of years back. That's why they're always broken. If anybody who doesn't know, McDonald's has an agreement with a vendor that everybody in their franchise will use these ice cream machines from this vendor. And that vendor has it locked down so that only their software can diagnose the machines and the codes. And they throw these codes all the flipping time. But it's so expensive to get a technician out there. That's why they'll be broken for days at a time at a restaurant. And 9 times out of 10, there's nothing actually wrong with the thing. It tripped a temperature code when somebody was cleaning it, and they can't reset it. That technician has to come out to reset it. That's literally what it is. It's utter bullshit. But because I know we did the story about a year and a half, 2 years ago, about people who had hooked a Raspberry Pi up to the control unit of the thing, so they could actually monitor the temperatures and reset it and things like that. And the company that made it sued the snot out of them.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
This is just one of the new rules put in place for the current 1201 review process. Every 3 years, the Copyright Office reviews requests for DMCA exemptions and grants ones it believes will benefit Americans. What could this possibly have to do with ice cream machines? The annoying truth is that the businesses love section 1201 of the DMCA. Section 1201 of the DMCA makes it illegal to bypass a digital lock protecting copyrighted work. That can be the DRM on a video file you download from iTunes, the carrier locks that prevent you from using a phone or other networks, or even the software running on a McDonald's soft serve machine that refuses to accept third-party repairs. By locking down a product with DRM, companies can dictate when and how items are repaired under the threat of legal consequences. This is an ongoing issue for people who want to fix all those busted ice cream machines. Earlier this year, iFixit and Public Knowledge submitted their request for an exemption that would have covered a wide swath of industrial equipment. The request included everything from building management software to the aforementioned ice cream machines. Unfortunately, the Copyright Office was unconvinced on some of these points. However, the Librarian of Congress must be just as sick as the rest of us to hear that the ice cream machine is broken. The office granted an exemption for retail-level food preparation equipment. That means that restaurant owners and independent repair professionals will be able to bypass the software locks that keep kitchen machinery offline until the right repair services get involved. This should lower prices and speed up repairs in such situations. Public Knowledge and iFixit expressed disappointment that the wider expansion was not granted, but they're still celebrating with some, you know, okay, yeah, that joke's stupid. Quote, there's nothing vanilla about the victory, and okay, I'm not reading the rest of this. Unfortunately, 1201 exemptions are not permanent. They're only valid until the next rulemaking session in 3 years, but can be extended if the conditions that prompted them are still present. So advocates may have to go to bat again in a few years to keep the ice cream working. So yeah, this is where we are. As a society, we've locked it down to where ice cream machines can only be repaired by the right people, or it's a copyright violation. And that the government had to step in and say, okay, no, that's not. But I mean, what? Yes, software runs everything these days. Between microcontrollers, computers, internet connectivity, I get it. And yes, you should be able to protect your work if you want to. But this is stupid when you can't even keep the machine working because it's deliberately designed to generate these expensive service calls, not, you know, do the task it was meant for. This is one of these... I don't know how you would write a law to support this because it's too broad, but if the machine is not meeting the purpose it was sold for, I don't think your controls for it should mean a damn thing. If I own the physical hardware, I'd be able to do whatever the hell I want to it, and that includes running my own software.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to take that ice cream machine apart and rewire it to use a different controller board, or I don't know, turbocharge it to freeze faster. I don't know. I don't know what mods you'd make to an ice cream machine.
I mean, as soon as the warranty runs out, you should be able to do whatever the fuck you want.
I mean, paint flames on the side to make it go faster. Oh, wait, it's an ice cream machine. You melt the ice cream. You know what I mean. But
that's you just as long as you're willing to avoid your warranty and shit like that, you can do what you want.
I don't think you ought to be able, I don't think you ought to avoid the warranty if what you're doing is not damaging it. That's the other thing, too. Like, the automotive industry, they have a bunch of rules in place that if I go in and, I don't know, put an aftermarket radio in my car, that doesn't void the warranty on the powertrain because it has nothing to do with the powertrain. That's law in our country. So you can't void my car's warranty for the engine because I put seat covers in. Or, you know, but you'll have them try it. They'll say, that's an unsupported modification. We can't warranty this repair. And you have to fight them over it. But, I mean, they're not supposed to do it that way. But, yeah, that's basically what they're doing is they're covering the whole thing. And of course, this is the right to repair stuff. You know, John Deere is doing this with tractors, too, which is just ridiculous. But. This whole lockout, if you don't do things exactly through their service so that they can charge an arm and leg for a service, is just obnoxious. And you know what? If you want to put the lockouts on there, you should be able to do that. I just don't like the idea that you can sue somebody in court for, you know, getting around your controls. Although, I also think if you're going to lock out your software, you got to have a competitor step up and say, here, I'm going to sell one that's not, because they'll sell a lot more.
Yeah.
At least I would expect them to. Maybe I'm naive. But yeah, that drives me up the wall that's where we are, is that we have to have a DMCA exemption for a fucking ice cream machine.
Government ain't there to make life easier, man.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. Well, speaking of stupid governments, why don't we do the BBC article you sent me? This one's from RU, BBC.com. Russia finds Google more money than there is in the entire world.
Maybe they can pay it in crypto.
Yeah, NFTs. Here's a picture of a monkey. It might be worth that in a couple of years. A Russian court has fined Google 2 undecillion rubles. You just sent me to try to get me to say these names.
I couldn't pronounce it.
That's a 2 followed by 36 zeros for restricting Russian state media channels on YouTube. In dollar terms, that means the tech giant has been told to pay 20... 11... That is a 20 with 33 zeros behind it in dollars. I don't know what number that is. I don't know how to say that out loud. you need scientific notation for that one. Despite being one of the world's wealthiest companies, that is considerably more than the $2 trillion Google is worth. In fact, it's far greater than the world's total GDP, which is estimated by the International Monetary Fund to be $110 trillion. The fine, which has reached such a gargantuan level because, as state news agency TASS has highlighted, it's rapidly increasing all the time. According to TASS, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov admitted, quote, He cannot even pronounce this number, unquote, but urged, quote, Google management to pay attention, unquote. The company has not commented publicly or responded to a BBC request for statement. Russia media outlet RBC reports that the fine on Google... The fine on Google relates to the restriction on content of 17 Russian media channels on YouTube. While this started in 2020, it escalated after Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine 2 years later. That saw most Western companies pull out of Russia, with doing business there also tightly restricted by sanctions. Russian media outlets were also banned in Europe, prompting retaliatory measures from Moscow. In 2022, Google's local subsidiary was declared bankrupt, and the company has stopped offering its commercial services in Russia, such as advertising. However, its products are not completely banned in the country. This development is the latest escalation between Russia and the U.S. tech giant. In May of 2021, Russia's media regulator, Roskomnadzor, accused Google of restricting YouTube access to Russian media outlets, including RT and Sputnik, and supporting illegal protest activity. I know I said that name wrong. Then, in July of 2022, Russia fined Google 2.1 billion ruble for failing to restrict access to what it called prohibited material about the war in Ukraine and other content. There's virtually no press freedom in Russia, with independent news outlets and freedom of expression severely curtailed. So, I'm not sure I understand what Russia's why they're bothering, because they know that Google's never going to pay that money or any money on this. You're essentially just guaranteeing that Google will never come back into your country.
I mean, one ruble is 0.010. So that large number may come down a little bit when converted to American dollars.
It's still a lot.
Yeah, but it's not as much as the article makes out, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, but still... It's a 2 followed by 36 zeros. Okay, well, if 1 ruble is worth a dime, knock 2 zeros off of it. So it's a 2 followed by 33 or 34 zeros. That's still a lot of money that I mean, that's more money than exists. That's like some of these copyright fines that are just ridiculous, because it's like, oh, well, the number of infringements are worth this much. Or like Nintendo going after the Gary Bowser guy for like stupid amounts of money. But it's just, so yeah, it's just, they're making up rules and then, you know, going after Google for not doing what they want, because why the hell would they?
It's like the Alex Jones fine. It's not about the fine. It's about the message.
Well, the message is Google's not allowed to back in Russia. That's essentially what it is.
That's what the message is.
So,
but they'll find a way.
I don't think they had plans on going back into Russia anyways, at least not right now. Maybe when the Ukraine shit's done and, you know, they start trying to open back up, you know, markets, maybe. But even then, and again, this gets to stuff we've talked about before, where it gets a little weird, where you start getting into geographic borders versus things on the internet, right? Because then you get into where things are hosted. So why would Russian laws apply to an American company? Oh, well, it's accessible in Russia. Well, yeah, we're not hosting it there. We're not specifically offering it there. I mean, are we going to get to the point where you have to have agreements with every country to allow their traffic? And again, what happens when somebody uses a VPN to get around the block? So,
I mean, these are the problems they're working on next with the online digital safety acts that every country is trying to fucking put together.
Yeah, one of the stories I saw and ultimately rejected was people trying to figure out how to fix the digital ID in your country. So, I rejected it because there wasn't really much to say there other than just the program they've implemented in Australia is crap and they're trying to figure out how to fix it.
Dude, we've got an Institute for Men's Behavior now. Minister for Men's Behavior. So, we're only beginning to go full fucking retard. It's going to be great.
Well, speaking of going full fucking retard, I've got an Ars Technica story here. I already posted that. 300% price hike pushes disgruntled VMware customers towards other solutions. This is retarded. So Broadcom bought VMware, and they just keep jacking up the license costs on VMware because they expect that they've got a lot of people who are captive markets because, you know, there were VMware was kind of the standard for running a virtual machine data center for years. But between cloud and other VM hosts, they've never been a monopoly. And I just it's ridiculous what they're doing. It's like, I think they're just trying to kill the brand at this point or extract as much money as they can from people who can't migrate off of it very fast.
I think that's their business model because they can see the writing on the wall.
Yeah. After closing go ahead.
No, I was just going to say they're going to mine it for everything they can get and then abandon it.
They're certainly doing that. After closing a $69 billion deal to buy virtualization technology company VMware a year ago, Broadcom wasted no time ushering in big changes to the way customers and partners buy and sell VMware offerings, and many of those clients aren't happy. To get a deeper look at the impact and the rising costs and overhauls like the end of VMware perpetual license sales have had on users, R spoke with several companies in the process of quitting the software due to Broadcom's changes. Broadcom closed its VMware acquisition in November of 2023, and by December of 2023, the company announced that it would stop selling perpetual VMware licenses. VMware products were previously sold under 8,000 SKUs, but they now have been combined into a few bundle packages. Additionally, higher CPU core requirements per CPU subscription have made VMware more expensive for some reseller partners. So, for anybody who's not familiar with that stuff, essentially, when you buy VMware licenses, there's a couple of different ways to do it. And the VMware's not the only one that does this. Lots of enterprise software does shit like this. It's obnoxious because it's basically ways to play games with the contracts. But they essentially have a different levels of pricing based on how many cores you have. Or how many CPU cores you have. So if your server has 20 cores in it, you know, that might cost one amount. But if your server has 50 cores in it, that might cost double because you can run a lot more on that server. So they feel like they can charge more, even though it's the exact same software. It's literally the exact same software. It's just you're running it on something more interesting. So they want more money. Quote, as on-premise virtualization projects move from enterprise license agreements and perpetual licenses to new bundling, socket to core ratios, and consumption models, the costs and pricing can increase 2 or 3 times. Unquote, Gartner's 2024 hype cycle for data center infrastructure technology support they released in June reads. Numerous VMware customers the author spoke with said their VMware costs rose to 300% after Broadcom's takeover. And I actually know this from my own job that we've had to flat out go to management and say, either we move off this VMware platform or you guys are going to have to fork over millions of dollars for licensing on these things. And they don't want to do it. They want to end all relationship with Broadcom because apparently the demand letter they got from Broadcom was just insulting.
Oh
yeah. It's
not like you're a small client either.
No. And that's the frustrating thing is it's like, it's absolutely retarded what they're doing. Cause it's like, this is shit Oracle was doing 20 years ago. And this is why nobody likes Oracle and everyone does everything they can to not use their products, which is why Oracle gives all of their stuff away and then comes in and tries to do licensing audits. It's also why you see more and more products trying to not be reliant purely on Oracle databases because they're literally, cause it's not the technology. The Oracle technology is fine, but it's their licensing is absurd, but you can download all of it for free on their website and use it. And then they'll just show up and start demanding license payments. They actually did that one to us too. It's like, well, we see you have so many VirtualBox installs. We're auditing our system. We don't see those. Well, see, here's the thing. We've seen that many downloads off of your systems. And because you're not, you know, a home user, the licensing is this and it costs this per year. And we're going to take you to court if you don't. So, yeah, Oracle can, you know, sit on attack too.
There's a group of people who used to operate like that back in the 30s. Nice business you have here. Fucking pay me.
Yeah, pretty much. Some companies have cited even higher price hikes, including AT&T, which claimed that Broadcom proposed a 1,050% price hike. Holy shit. AT&T is suing Broadcom over perpetual license support and says it is looking to find more alternatives. IT support provider Encore Technologies is currently migrating from VMware to Open Nebula. VMware costs rising threefold under Broadcom drove the company to try other products. Bradley Bishop, Encore's DevOps manager, told the author via email. The higher costs come from Broadcom consolidating all of VMware offerings into two line items, he said. Quote, so unless you were using the entire VMware product line, a lot of companies are now forced to pay for things they did not want or need, unquote. He added, Dean Culpitz, CTO at a Canadian VMware customer and managed service provider Members IT Group, shared similar sentiments, adding that, quote, Broadcom is simply not listening to what customers say they want or need, unquote, when it comes to VMware products and features, especially those related to small and medium businesses. VMware Enterprise Edition costs for Illinois Lakeland College rose 300%, quote, with no additional features or benefits, unquote, Director of Technological Services James Wisendorf said via email. Lakeland has used VMware since 2008, but as a community college, its budget can only stretch so far. Wesendorf explained, quote, since we are a community college, we are responsible to the taxpayers to be good stewards in our funds and investments in technology. When there's a significant price increase, such as 300%, it becomes an issue that requires us to weigh costs against the gains and seek alternative options, unquote. Yeah, it's literally, you're literally killing the budget of IT departments with this shit. So if they have to stick with VMware, they literally probably have no budget for anything else. When asked to comment on this story, a Broadcom representative declined to answer specific questions regarding VMware's customers' concerns. Instead, the company referred to Broadcom CEO Hock Tan's recent blog posts, and they've got a link to those. On the other hand, large customers are more likely to be willing and able to stomach VMware price hikes. IT company Veeam, for example, saw prices for VMware products it uses jump 300%, but quote, internal services are staying the course, unquote, Rick Vanover, Veeam's product strategy VP, told the author. Pricing and other changes have led some customers and partners to suspect that Broadcom prefers enterprise-sized customers for VMware. In January, Broadcom reportedly took approximately 2,000 of VMware's biggest customers direct, cutting channel partnerships from the deals. Nonprofit organizations like hospitals and school districts have been the clients of most dramatically impacted by Broadcom's changes to VMware, with smaller and mid-sized customers having a, quote, high degree of difficulty, unquote, absorbing VMware's new cost structure. Andrew Lerner, a distinguished VP analyst at Gartner, told the author. He said it's reasonable to expect enterprise-sized clients to represent a larger majority of VMware's customer base moving forward. Quote, based on what we're hearing from clients, smaller and nonprofit customers are experiencing some combination of the following. Okay, yeah, blah, blah, blah. The article goes on. It talks about how difficult it is to move off VMware and basically how Broadcom has just pissed everybody off. But they do have at least a captive audience for a limited time, because the thing is, anybody who's done corporate IT, especially corporate IT, knows how slow it is to change or fix anything. So, you know, yeah, VMware hiking their prices 300% is a pretty good incentive to try to figure out other solutions. But VMware is also a fairly core part of a lot of IT infrastructure. So trying to move off of that, especially when you have automation, you have runbooks, you have policy based around how VMware works, that's not easy. You know, you're basically having to rehome your entire system. And what's worse, a lot of the smaller companies don't actually make product decisions because they go through a managed service provider. So the managed service provider is just jacking up the rates on everything to cover the cost rather than to re-engineer things. And it's not a direct transition. You can't just migrate virtual machines from VMware into KVM or IBM's VM hosting or the Hyper-V, the Windows one. You can't just do that. You can migrate them. It's not impossible. But it's a lot of work. You have to spin the virtual machine down. You have to convert the image from VMware to whatever your new software understands. Most likely you'll have to reconfigure each VM by hand or change over your automations to talk to the new software. Then you've got to spin everything back up and QA it. I mean, this is not trivial to switch off of VMware. It's, I'm trying to think of a good analogy.
They know it. That's why they're jacking the price up.
Yeah.
They're trying to get in now while they can before something. It sounds to me there's some innovation coming down the pipe that's going to change everything.
Well, yeah, it's cloud service. It's cloud hosting because there's a lot of medium and small companies that don't even bother, and even big companies, that aren't bothering to build out data centers and rent hosting. They're just setting up on Amazon.
Well, Amazon or Azure. Amazon and Google have got the majority of that.
Well, Amazon and Microsoft, Google. Google's actually number three in that game, but Google too.
Their centers are getting that big that they're powering up nuclear power stations for it.
Mm-hmm. And even larger companies are sitting there comparing the cost of just hosting things in the cloud versus maintaining a data center. And well, VMware just makes a really good argument to not host your own data center right there. So, and again, it's not that there's not alternatives to VMware. Proxmox is pretty damn good if you know what you're doing with it. It's KVM under the hood, but still.
As a terrorist, why make a dirty bomb when you can make an EMP and really fucking wreck shit?
This is why they don't advertise where data centers are. It's not that you can't find them, but it's a lot of work.
Ew.
So, but you're right. That is where, and if you're doing proper data, if you're designing your data centers correctly, you should have more than one physical location. So when a jack wagon does pull up the EMP van next to your data center, you're not completely out of business. Next article is from Gizmodo. This is again back to there. We're from the government and we're here to help. Feds say you don't have a right to check out retro video games like library books. I don't know how that, I don't just read the article. Most of the world's video games from close to 50 years of history are effectively legally dead. A Video Game History Foundation study found that you can't buy nearly 90% of games from before 2010. Preservationists have been looking for ways to allow people to legally access gaming history, but the U.S. Copyright Office dealt them a heavy blow Friday. Feds declared that you or any researcher has no right to access old games under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Groups like the VGHF and the Software Preservation Network have been putting their weight behind an exemption to the DMCA surrounding video game access. The law says you can't remotely access old, defunct games that are still under copyright without a license, even though they're not available for purchase. Current rules in the DMCA restrict libraries and repositories of old games to one person at a time in person. The foundation's proposed exemption would have allowed more than one person at a time to access the content stored in museums, archives, and libraries. That would allow players to access a piece of video game history like they would if they checked out an ebook from a library. The VGHF and SPN argued that if the museum has several copies of the game in its possession, then it should be able to allow as many people to access the game as there are copies available. In the Copyright Office's decision dated October 18th, Director Shira Perlmutter agreed with the multiple industry groups, including the Entertainment Software Association. She recommended the Library of Congress keep the same restriction. Section 1201 of the DMCA restricts unauthorized access to copyrighted works, including games. However, it allows the Library of Congress to allow... Yeah, so anyways, it's basically the same thing from the other one. It's the same... book of decisions of exemptions. They exempted ice cream machines, but old games, nope. In a statement, the VGHF said lobbying efforts from rights holders, quote, continue to hold back progress, unquote. The group pointed to comments from a representative from the ESA. An attorney for the ESA told Ars Technica, quote, I don't think there is the moment any combination of limitations that ESA members would support to provide remote access, unquote. Video game preservationists said that the game repositories could provide full-screen pop-ups of copyright notices to anybody who checked out a game. They would also restrict access to a time limit or force users to access via technological controls like purpose-built distribution of streaming platforms. Industry groups argued that those museums didn't have, quote, appropriate safeguards, unquote, to prevent users from distributing the games once they had them in hand. They also argued that there's a substantial market for older or classic games, and new free library of access to games would jeopardize this market. What?
What?
Okay, bullshit.
Dude, that's my fucking... I collect this shit.
Okay.
There is no market to speak of.
Okay. I know what he's talking about. He's talking about the retro collector's market. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go into eBay right now. We're going to punch in Super Mario RPG cartridge.
Dude, unless it's an extremely rare game, you're not paying much for these games.
Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars, $71.95. Super Mario RPG and Wario Pikmin cartridges, $150. Yeah, that's about what I expected. You have one in box is $200.
Yeah, you're getting the box and a cartridge. $200, that's nothing for a collector to pay.
And I picked that game specifically because I knew that that was one of the ones that got more expensive. Also, I was mad when I discovered they got more expensive because I had sold on my Super Nintendo stuff back, you know, in the 90s when it wasn't worth anything. So, yeah, I felt bad about that. But I knew that one specifically because that was one I had. Yeah, there's one, $250. What he's saying is that you'll destroy that secondary market for, you know, collecting retro games if you allow people to check them out. Here's the thing. You know how you know it's bullshit? I can go on any ROM site right now and get this same game for free.
Yeah.
The people collecting the cartridges are doing it because they want the thing in their hand and they don't want a crappy flash cart repro.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to get at, man. It's a 0.1% hobby too that do this, and generally you're only collecting one sort of retro machine, or you know, you're doing the Sega collection or you're doing the Nintendo collection,
Commodore, what I'm doing,
whatever floats your boat, you know. And the only time you start getting into the hundreds and hundreds of dollars is if the game is extremely rare or it's extremely good condition, in box with instructions. Most of the time, you're getting these cartridges $5-6 a throw, because there's millions of them out there. And any collector worth their salt goes to yard sales to get this shit in, not paying top dollar.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and again, you know, you want to have some fun. Again, go on and use markets and look up, like, again, I just mentioned the Commodore stuff because I'm familiar with that because I've been, you know, collecting it. Look up what a Commodore 1581, which is the 3.5 floppy drive for the 64 and the 128. Look up what those drives cost for a fucking floppy drive. And again, if you just want to play the games and run the software, there's no reason to go pay $400 for a fucking floppy drive, okay?
Well, I just paid $70 for a PlayStation 2 game.
Sure.
In box.
And there's no reason to do it, because you can probably go online, get the ROM, and play it for free.
I could.
All you want to do is play the game.
I want the fucking game. Actually, I have 3 copies of the game. I didn't need that game.
You just wanted that
copy. I wanted it. Well, dude, the game was banned in the country on release.
Oh, yeah.
And so the copies that are actually available for a PAL system are extremely rare. And the more I have, I'm taking them out of the market, which makes the market more expensive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see what I'm doing there? But I've paid $120 for a PlayStation 1 game, no box, scratch CD, but it still worked.
Well, the point I'm making is that their argument is moot. You're not going to destroy that collector's market by letting people check a game out of a library or play a ROM online.
I'm telling you, 99% of collectors collect the game cartridge, and then it goes on display. It doesn't get used.
Yeah, I have every intention of cleaning up my collection of Commodore machines and then putting them on the wall and not using them. Because why would I use them when I can emulate them on a Raspi or a freaking Mister and have just as good an experience, if not better, for playing with the software and not put my hardware at jeopardy?
That's how you know the author of the story had no idea what he's talking about.
Yep.
He just thought old things collectible, there's a market. It's not.
No, it's a very small bullshit exchange. It's a bullshit excuse. They're just trying to find a reason to be able to control the market, because someday we might. You know, it's like that asshole in England who nobody's going to know what I'm talking about. There's a law in Britain called the Law of Ancient Lights, and basically, if you have a window that has been receiving natural sunlight for I think more than 20 years. That window, by law, they can't build something that's going to block your light in adjacent lots. So when that law was passed, apparently there were several people who went around basically dropping telephone poles with boards on them right across the property line in front of their neighbor's windows, just so that they never had to worry about, you know, having restrictions on their property. It's like, it's such an asshole move, but they're doing it because the law is written in such a way that they feel like they don't have a choice. And that's what they're doing here, is they're just protecting that they might someday maybe want to do something with the old games. And yeah, a lot of the consoles do let you go play the old games now by getting them through an online store or something, but it's not the same. And a lot of times they change stuff.
Oh yeah, they do.
The
timing's never the same.
Oh, that's absolutely the case. That's still, you know, so you saw me playing those Mega Man games. To this day, I have yet to find one. Mister's the closest. Playing it on a Mister is the closest I've ever felt to playing it, like, you know, like it felt to play on a Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Because emulators miss inputs. And it fucking is annoying as hell when you miss a hard jump because you hit the button and the game just didn't register it. So it's like, fuck. And yeah, I know it sounds like you're blaming the controller because you missed the jump. And sometimes that might be the case. But I've played some of these games enough to know that it's like, nope, I didn't miss that. The emulator fucked up.
Yep.
So. Anyways, Gaming on Linux has an article. I don't need to read a lot. Valve announced a change for Steam today that will make things a lot clearer for everyone, as developers now need to clearly list the kernel-level anti-cheat used on Steam store pages. So, yeah, they actually are going to start requiring games to list on the store page the anti-cheats they use. And they're not saying that's good or bad, they're just saying they're going to require it. Because, you know, maybe you want to know that a game uses anti-cheat because you're sick of the game you're playing being, you know, full of cheaters. Or maybe you don't like kernel-level anti-cheat because it's putting something in your kernel and you want to know what software has that. Again, it's just disclosure. I think it's good.
Yeah. Transparency is always good.
Absolutely. You should have the option to know what's happening on your machine. If it's yours.
Well, that way you're informed. You can opt out if you don't want to do it.
Yeah, if I don't want that anti-cheat, I should have the choice to... Well, I mean, I have the choice, but I should know it's there so I can use that as part of the decision of, do I buy that game or not? Because, you know, if I have a machine, which I do, that I dedicate just to playing games, I may not care that it's got a kernel-level anti-cheat on it because I don't do anything on that machine that I'd worry about. But if I... you know, share that machine with doing banking or any number of other things that maybe I care about having that kernel, you know, module installed in. Well, that's a different game. So, anyways, we're at time. I don't have a dojo tonight, but I'll go ahead and throw the last link I had out there because it's ridiculous. It's from GameSpot. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have launched a Fortnite map. They've published the code to get to it. Basically, they're advertising for politics in Fortnite.
Fellow kids.
The article ends by, you know, apparently talking about Walz talking about playing Crazy Taxi. And, you know, it's like, well, are Republicans going to respond by doing a Fortnite map of their own? No, they're not.
because
most of the people playing Fortnite aren't old enough to vote. What the fuck are you doing?
This is what I'm. And I tell you, he won more votes with autistic people driving a fucking garbage truck. Dude, if Trump fucking drives a train, he's got it home and hosed with autists. I'm telling you right now, get that man in a train.
Get the foamer vote.
Get him in a conductor's hat. Dude, you'll have all the autism in the world voting for you.
That would be an amazing photo op, actually. You see Trump in the old school conductor's uniform?
I could see him in a train hat. I never thought I'd see him in a high-vis vest, but fuck me, the universe will provide, right?
Well, I mean, hell, you saw him leaning out of a McDonald's drive-thru, too, so for what
I was saying earlier, man, the last 3 weeks of this campaign has been more like a WWE experience than it has been a fucking campaign.
Well, considering where Trump used to work.
I know, that's what I'm saying. It fucking looks like that, because that's where he came from, you know? He's putting on a show. He's not here to convince you of anything. He's just giving you a fucking good show.
All right.
As I said, I'm not a fan of the man, but God, he can fucking entertain people.
That's all I got. Of course, listen to the stream. Well, this closer is no longer any good because we're going to shut everything down. It's like, listen to the stream.
Do it before it ends.
That's going to turn that
off.
Jared Decking, next Thursday. Every Thursday. No, just next Thursday. The G15 radio site, the website will stay up. I'm going to redo it. I've got to figure out, do I want to kill the system I'm using to manage the shows, which does all the RSS feeds and stuff like that, and just post a big archive? We'll talk about that. We'll figure that shit out later, because I don't know what I want to do. Yeah. BBS is going to stick around. The BBS will stick around. I've got to redo the website, because it's getting worse. You have any closing thoughts?
I'd like to see an archive go up. Be nice.
Okay. Yeah, I figured we would.
It depends on how much space we've got, things like that.
It's not going to be a problem on space. The real question is going to be, how do I bundle it in any way that makes sense? Maybe by year or something.
Dude, I just throw it in a pile and let the kids sort it out. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a thing.
That's most of the old shows that I go back and listen to from other podcasts that don't exist anymore. That's pretty much how they do it.
Well, I mean, they're all MP3s.
They're all numbered.
They're not going to. It's not like archiving is going to actually save any space. They don't compress that well. So,
that's it.
That's it. Yeah, that's sound effects.
Thank you for your continuing patience during this transitional zombie apocalypse. Your satisfaction is very important to us.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.